What's up, Kings fans? If you haven't heard about Anchor by Spotify, it's the easiest way to make a podcast with everything you need all in one place. Let me explain. Anchor has tools that allow you to record and edit your podcast right from your phone or computer. When hosting on Anchor, you can distribute your podcast on listening platforms like Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and more. It's everything you need to make a podcast in one place. And best of all, Anchor, it's totally free. Download the Anchor app or go to anchor.fm to get started.
This is for you, Kings fans, wherever you may be. All the frustration and disappointment of the past is gone. The 45-year drought is over. The Los Angeles Kings are indeed the Kings of the National Hockey League. They are the 2012 Stanley Cup champions.
Cleared away by the Kings, picked up by Martinez. Martinez to Clifford, feet to the right side to Foley with a shot. Save, rebound, score! Alec Martinez has won the Stanley Cup for the Los Angeles Kings, and royalty reigns again in the NHL.
Hey, what's up, Kings fans? Welcome to the Hockey Royalty Podcast, episode number 16, the unofficial podcast of RinkRoyalty.com. Hey, guys, it's episode number 16. That means it's Sweet 16 for us. How nice. Anyways, I'm Scott Kidville. Before we get going, I want to let you know you can find us on social media. You can find us at Twitter at @royalty_pod. And also at Rink Royalty, you can find us at Facebook. And now you can find us on Instagram as well. So we got a really cool show lined up for you tonight. It's an Ontario rain flavored kind of show. But before we get going, I want to bring in our panel. First of all, our fearless leader, Mr. Ryan Sykes. What's going on, Ryan?
Hey, Scott. I'm doing well. How are you?
Oh, hanging in there, man. Hanging in there. And up next, we got Russell Morgan. What's up, Russ? All right. Well, that's all right. He'll be back.
It's a good start.
Hey, what's a great podcast without some technical difficulties, right? All right. Well, while we're waiting for Russ to come back, we also got a third member of our panel, Mr. Jack Weber. What's going on, Jack?
Not too much, Scott. Always good to talk some hockey with you guys.
All right. Well, we're glad to have you. And it looks like Russ is back. Russ, can you hear us?
I am here. Sorry about that, guys. Good to be here.
That's okay. Like I said, always got to overcome some technical difficulties. It's all good. All right. So now that we got that out of the way, I want to bring in our guest. Coming to us from our very own Ontario reign of the AHL, we got the one, we got the only, Mr. Boko Amama. Boko, thanks for coming on the show. We appreciate it. So how's it going out there tonight, all right?
Yeah, going pretty good, as usual.
That's right.
How's the weather? Hey, Boko, how's the weather out there?
The weather's been pretty nice, especially this week, last week. So we've been enjoying it. You know, a couple of trips to the beach, for sure.
And you guys are off all this week, right? How are you keeping busy?
Oh, like I said, it was pretty much the beach all weekend, I'll say. So there's guys with pretty nice suntan.
You guys go to the beach. Who's the group of guys that's riding in a car together?
Oh, we all live pretty close. It's all pretty much a walking distance, to be honest. And so we pretty much just always just meet there. And, we go from there.
Very cool. You know, I got to tell you, I'm kind of jealous because I don't know how much you've heard about our show, but I'm in upstate New York. I know Ryan's in Chicago, so we're spread out all over the country. And I can tell you right now in upstate New York, there are no beaches open. So, or they are if you want to join the Polar Bear Club, but, you know.
Yeah, both. You're from Montreal, right?
Right, yeah, right.
Yeah, so I'm up in Canada, too. I'm in Toronto, so it's not beach weather here. It's not beach weather here yet, as you know.
Oh, I bet.
So, Boko, Jack just mentioned you're from Toronto. From Montreal. So, how did you get into hockey?
Oh, pretty much in Montreal, if you're a 4 or 5 years old boy, back in the days, we're for sure playing hockey. It was just hockey was the biggest thing, the Montreal Canadiens. So I feel like every single kid just play hockey, at least. You know, some of them will eventually drop off as they went, but I felt like it was just, you know, it was just sitting there for me. So I was just one of those kids.
At what point At what point did you kind of realize that professional hockey would be kind of a realistic option for you?
I would say when I was around 14, 15 years old, because I also played a bunch of other sports growing up, and I was having fun in all of them. But obviously, going into midget, then they're talking about, you know, your junior draft. Us, it was it's called the QMJHL. And I feel like that's when things got a little bit more serious on my side.
So what other sports were you playing?
So I played football, played some baseball, basketball, played soccer. My dad just threw me everywhere he could throw me in. So I just did it all growing up.
And, you know, they say that for athletes, that's a great thing to be able to play multiple different sports instead of just concentrating on one from a young age. That way you don't get burned out.
Oh, definitely. For me, it was good. I'm so grateful to have played multiple sport, and
Last week we had Alex LaFerriere on the third round pick in this last year's draft, and it's kind of interesting listening to everyone's story of how they kind of narrowed down to hockey, because he played lacrosse. I think he played, what other sport did he play, guys? Badminton or something like that. I'm gonna butcher that.
I thought he said tennis. I think he said tennis.
Yeah, but anyways, it's just.
I would think tennis before badminton.
Yeah. Sorry, Alex, if you're listening.
Oh, that's okay. He could be the backyard champion, right?
Yeah. Exactly.
So, Boko, were you a Canadiens fan growing up?
Yeah, for sure. Montreal has such a big impact on every single kid that was, playing the game. And, in the city of Montreal, I remember they were just all over the place. You know, everything, it was Montreal Canadiens. So you kind of had to be a Montreal Canadiens fan growing up. So, yeah.
Not much of a choice then, huh?
Yeah, not really.
Boko, I know that you were drafted in the sixth round 2015 by Tampa Bay. I was just wondering if you could kind of just tell us what that draft process was like.
Oh, for sure. Still remember the day. Well, we'll never forget the day, that's for sure. Yeah, it was a special one. And, that year I was actually not even expecting to be drafted at first, because I went undrafted the year before. So my expectations are drop usually for the second year. But, a couple of days before the draft, I was getting, a bunch of calls. And, my family, we decided to just, jump on the plane. We made it to the draft. And I remember it was really special when the Tampa Bay Lightning decided to draft me.
Now, you played your junior hockey with the St. John's Sea Dogs, correct?
Correct, yeah.
You know, I got to tell you, the Q has some of the coolest team names ever. I just have to say that. You know, like between the Sea Dogs, I like the Chicoutimi Sanguinines. It's awesome, you know?
Yeah.
So what kind of an impact did that playing for the Sea Dogs have on you going forward?
Oh, for sure. They had a big one. Like any other players coming out of juniors or out of college, those years are big years in your life. That's when you make the jump from, kind of like being a kid to either jumping pro or, decide to do whatever you want with your life. But for me in St. John, it was really special. I think St. John, it's a place that is easy to fall in love to. The organization was awesome. The fan base, we won too on my last year. So obviously it makes things even nicer. But St. John, it was definitely a good time.
You wore a letter for the last 2 years there, and you're wearing a letter now for the Ontario Reign. What does it kind of mean for you to, don that leadership role for both clubs?
I mean, for me, it always came natural, and it just comes with my character, and the way I play on the ice. So it always kind of came natural for me. It's definitely an honor when you know, a pro team can recognize you as a leader as well. But, yeah.
How does it feel to be on such, like, so a young team now? I mean, the Reign have such young players playing with them, like Quentin Byfield and Arthur Kaliev and Alex Turcotte, that are first-year pros. How does that feel to be kind of the leader for that kind of team?
Oh, for sure. I mean, it's a, you know, it's definitely a special year for, you know, for everyone. And I feel like everyone is kind of on that learning experience with a COVID season, if I can call it like that. But, you know, for sure to be, you know, one of the leaders and, you know, one of the guys that have to set the example in the room, off the ice, like I said earlier, kind of fits my character. So it's a little bit more natural to me. But I also remember coming in the league, it felt like it was not so long ago when I was adapting to the pro life and being in those guys' shoes. So it definitely feels good to you know, show them what it's like.
I'm kind of jumping back to when you were first, when your rights were kind of first acquired by the Kings. I guess, did you have any inclination that you might end up there, or kind of just walk us through what that was like?
I mean, yeah, for sure. No one expects to be traded, especially as a young prospect. You feel like the team that has drafted you don't even, you don't know you as much. So you definitely don't expect to be traded. And, but yeah, when I found out that I was traded to the Kings, I was so excited. Kings were already a team I was looking a lot, because they, you know, they were playing my style. They had a lot of, you know, big, gritty forwards that, you know, hard-nosed forwards. So I wouldn't say like a Kings fan, but, you know, they were one of the team that I was watching. And when I found out that I was traded there, I was pretty excited. And, you know, I couldn't wait to, you know, bring my style here and, you know, get going.
That's funny that you say that, because I seem to hear that a lot from a lot of players. You know, Christian Willanen, he recently spoke, he was formally introduced to the media, and he kind of had to step back and say, well, before I say anything about the Kings, there's no disrespect to Ottawa here, but, you know, he said it's kind of a dream destination to end up in LA. So it's just funny to hear you kind of iterate those same sentiments.
Oh, yeah, no, definitely, definitely. And, you know, obviously we have, you know, we know people across the league too. And, you know, there's, you know, I think LA always, you know, always been one of the top spot, I think. So it's for sure special to be around here.
Well, being able to go to the beach in April helps too, doesn't it?
Exactly. And right in California too, you get to, you know, to have the California lifestyle. So it's pretty cool.
Who's someone on the Ontario Reign roster that's really kind of opened your eyes this year?
Oh, wow. I could name you a lot of guys, you know, from the young guys to the old guys. But I think for me, it will be a guy like Brett Sauter, you know, our captain. And, you know, just all he's bringing on the table. And I know this year was definitely not easy for a guy like him, where, you know, he was used to, you know, always be the top guy on every team he played. I remember me being a rookie, he was, you know, probably the four playing the most minutes. And, you know, this year, he has a role to fill, and he's doing just that every single game. And he's just helping me too. He's helping me too to be on top of my stuff too. So I will go with Sauter for sure.
Excellent. So you see any guys that you're playing against in the AHL now from your junior days, or any rivalries renewed?
Say that again, please.
So is there any guys that you were playing against in junior that you're seeing in the AHL now? Like a rivals renewed kind of thing?
Yeah, actually, in our division, not that much. I feel like there's not many guys from, you know, the Quebec League around in the Western Division. I feel like they're more down east, or, you know, the Central Division. But there's definitely a couple guys. There's definitely a couple guys that, you know, I play junior with. But, you know, on the ice, we don't really, you know, there's nothing going on between us on the ice. Well, mostly the most skilled guys too, so they kind of just leave me alone, I guess.
Bogo, I'm curious. At what point or what age in your like minor hockey career did you start to decide you were going to incorporate, you know, being kind of like the fighter or the enforcer into your game? And at what age did that start to become part of the way you played?
You know, to be honest with you, it was always, I would say it was always in me. I always played with, you know, that high edge, you know, physically, everything just came natural to me. Even when I was playing football, I was, you know, just trucking guys, you know, during all the whole game. Yeah, but to answer your question, in hockey, actually, you know, came more in my first year in juniors when, you know, fighting was actually allowed. So, and, you know, me being a big, strong guy that was playing hard, obviously it was, you know, challenges were coming and fighting were just coming and I would answer. And, you know, I would do good too. So, you know, then your name starts to go around a little bit. And, you know, next thing you know, you're just that guy. So
in 2016, 2017, you kind of made enormous strides in your offensive game, 41 goals, 14 points for 14 assists for 55 points. What do you kind of attribute to that, I guess, leap in offensive production from the previous season?
You're talking about that season itself?
Yeah.
Well, for sure it was, I think, yeah, at the time, that was my overage season in St. John. And, you know, Coach Danny Flynn, he was the head coach at the time for the Sea Dogs. And you know what? He just gave me my chance. He gave me a chance to play. He gave me a chance to play on the top lines. He gave me just a lot of minutes. And, you know, I was able to answer and to grow as a player in that role. And, you know, it just paid off. I just made sure I was doing what I was doing, working hard, and, you know, the goals and all that just came with it.
So the Reign have had a kind of an up and down season so far. I know the start wasn't probably what you guys would have wanted, but give us like your thoughts on how the season's kind of progressed and throughout so far. I know there's been some tough challenges with COVID, like you mentioned.
Well, yeah, like you said, I think early we were just trying to, you know, kind of find our identity as a team. You know, it's not easy when you have a lot of young guys coming in. I think we have 13 new players total. So for sure, like the team is, it's like a complete different team. But as the year went, we kind of found our game, and I think the teams out there, even though our record doesn't, you know, really help us, I would say, but I think the other teams know that we have a young, dangerous group with the Reign. So it's like I said, it's a learning experience for us. We're all growing. We're growing into the team that we want to be. But I think we have a dangerous group.
Coach Robleski's style, or since he's been with the team, his first year with you.
Yeah, for sure. Robo's a good coach. He's a great coach. There's a lot of great values that he's bringing to his team. You know, his energy, the way he approached the game. And for him, too, it's a learning experience. It's not easy, you know, coming into a new team. And, you know, he has to kind of, like, be the saver or something like that. But I think he's doing a good job as pushing the boys every night and, you know, just trying to give us the best tool to get better.
That's for sure. It, by all accounts, it sounds like Coach Robo is a great guy for everybody we've talked to. So we got a listener question here for you. Now, this is from Richard Sarabia, and it's actually a five-part question, but you've already answered the first part pretty much. So we'll break it down one part at a time here. So he wanted to know how you're enjoying your time in California, which we talked about already. Obviously, being able to go to the beach in April is a very nice perk. But he wants to know where your favorite food spot is.
My favorite food spots?
Yeah.
Yeah, so right now with the lockdown, I don't get to, you know, discover as much. So, you know, right now I'm using, you know, DoorDash, Uber Eats. You know, just trying to cook it at home right now. So, unfortunately, gotcha. Can't really answer that question.
that's all right. Eventually, right? Eventually. All right. So, part two here. He wants to know, do you like boxing? And if you do, who's your favorite boxer?
Yeah, I definitely do love boxing. And right now, the heavyweight division is actually really interesting right now. There's Anthony Joshua that I really love watching. Tyson Fury, I really like that belt. I actually love both of them. So pretty much, you know, just those top heavyweights that I enjoy watching.
Very cool.
Do you watch any MMA, UFC, Boko?
Yeah, I will. You know, the big events or, you know, anyone in the top 10 watching. Anyone in the top 10 fighting, excuse me, I'll be watching for sure.
Do you have kind of a favorite fighter?
Oh, well, in the MMA right now?
Yeah.
We love the big Francis Ngannou.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's just a monster.
He's a brawler.
Yes, he is.
So, you know, speaking of all that, here's the last part of Richard's question. So we've got it all broken down here. He wants to know, who is the toughest guy you fought in your whole career? And if you could fight anyone from any time period, who would it be?
Well, to me, it's the Gallant, Alex Gallant. There's something with those Gallant brothers. They just, you know, they just, I don't like to give credit to other fighters like that. But I'll have to give his. I think he's a pretty tough guy, and all time. Well, I mean, I don't know if I would love to fight him, but definitely Bob Proberg, just because the name that he's carrying. But I don't know if that would be that fun, though.
Very true. So, you know, just along those lines, there's something I've always kind of wondered. Like, you see, you know, sometimes guys get out on the ice and they just kind of look at each other and the gloves drop. Now, is that kind of like an understood thing when, like, one tough guy sees another guy skating out on the ice? You just kind of know it's going to be a go time, or is it a lot of times more spontaneous? Or I'm not saying it's predecided, but you know where I'm getting at?
Yeah, I know where you're getting at. And, you know, I feel like it depends on the situation. So,
right. So
I don't know. Maybe I threw a hit a game before that, you know, the guy didn't like. And next game, you know, he's, you know, before the game started, in his head, he already thinking about fighting me or something like that. So there's, you know, a lot goes into fighting. So that's why on my part, I just show up every game ready to, you know, ready to battle, ready for whatever. So,
whatever. Well, you're certainly one of the heart and soul guys, that's for sure.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Thank you. But yeah, that's how I just prepare. But yeah, well, to answer your question, actually, it's getting less and less stage. I feel like in the previous season, guys were fighting what, 20 times a year,
something right. Like that.
I think now at 8-9 fights, you're the league leader. So. Yeah, it's way less stage, I'd say.
Gotcha.
So, Boca, I want to ask you about our pin tweet on the Rink Royalty. We talked about it before you came on. It was your fight against Jan Jenik of the Tucson Roadrunners. We are a kid-friendly, quote-unquote, podcast, so if you could maybe divulge what he said to you. That kind of set you off in that manner.
Yeah, well, no, obviously on the clip, you know, we just show, you know, the moment where, you know, everything goes down. But I think we had to lead that game from 3 goals. And, you know, there was a couple cheap shots or, you know, little stuff that was going on prior to that. But it was going on when I was not on the ice. So, obviously, well, this time I was on the ice and, you know, there was, you know, some little stuff going on and, you know, my patient was already, you know, kind of like at the end. And, well, yeah, he decided to send me an invite. And
you've got mail.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
That was maybe the best response I could have asked for.
I'm just telling you how it went down.
Yeah.
It's awesome. So Volko, take us through a game day routine for you.
Yeah, so game day routine. We get to morning skate. After morning skate is usually the usual, probably pick up my pre-game meal at from North Italia, nice little Italian restaurant. Have my pre-game at home. Then, you know, probably chat with my dad, my mom, before going for my pre-game nap. And pre-game nap, get up, shower, and maybe a little snack before leaving the house and, you know, just getting ready for the game.
You know, those pre-game naps are so important because even as a beer league player, I have to take pre-game naps. So I can't imagine what it's like for you guys.
We even take pre-game naps here, you know, just watching the game in Chicago. Yep. Or or up till like midnight or 1 a.m. watching these games.
Pre-game nap are needed for anything.
Yeah. So, I mean, pre-game nap, are you like dedicating a solid like 1 to 2 hours to this thing?
Oh, no, I'm not like that. I'm just listening to my body. Sometimes it could be just, you know, 30 minutes that I need. And, you know, in that night, I have my legs. I'm going. And some nights I can be sleeping a whole 2 hours. And
yeah,
maybe sleeping 2 hours wasn't it, you know? So,
well, Volko, I can tell you when you hit 46, it's going to be at least 1 or 2 hours. I will tell you that. Oh, man. So you guys got any other questions for Volko?
Yeah,
or?
Yeah, I do, Volko. So, obviously, the Reign have Akil Thomas, Quentin Byfield, and DSP on there. What does it kind of mean to you just kind of seeing all the African-Canadian, African-American heritage just kind of all on one team? You know, it's pretty special to me to see, but I just want to hear it from you.
It's definitely special. And, you know, I don't know how many, you know, those are things that you don't know how many times it's going to happen in your career. And we're definitely aware of that. So, you know, but we're just taking advantage to the situation. And, you know, unfortunately with COVID and everything going on, it's hard for us to, you know, get involved in the, you know, maybe in the community too. It would have been so awesome, but, you know, we're definitely grateful for this chance. And all four, we have obviously a great relationship, so it just makes things even more fun here in LA.
What have you seen kind of from Quentin Byfield, and I'll even throw in Akil Thomas as well, I guess, what have you liked about their game since the day one, since they joined you guys, and to where they are right now?
Well, for sure, we all knew that they were, you know, highly skilled players, but what really actually, you know, impressed me is their competitive level. Like, those are two guys that, you know, they're putting in the work to get better. Like, they know that, you know, they're not just sitting on their, you know, their past success or stuff like that. You know, every day they're showing up, you know, with a chip on their shoulder, and they're getting ready to work, and, you know, they're growing as professionals too. So, you know, in a couple of years when they'll be able to, you know, add some definition to their bodies, I think that would be super special.
And then just to kind of wrap, unless anyone else has another question here, it's a very cliche question, and typically you get a cliche answer, but when you get the call up to the NHL, what's that moment going to mean for you, Volko?
Well, for sure, it will mean everything. It will mean my whole life. You know, you dedicate all those years, you know, to kind of like, you know, to hope to make your dream happen. So, you know, been waiting there for this, you know, for a long time. Just you know, staying patient with it. You know, keep working, but it will definitely mean everything for me.
Actually, I said one more question for you, Volko. So going back to, you said, you know, you were growing up in Montreal. Was there any one player in particular, whether it was with the Habs or another team, who you really enjoyed watching or kind of tried to model your game after?
I wouldn't say model my game after, but growing up, Vinny LeCavalier was just like a legend back home in Montreal. So he was kind of like the guy that I looked up to. You know, I knew his numbers. You know, I would just, every time he scored a goal, like, you know, kind of like the whole city pretty much knew him. So Vinny LeCavalier had a big impact, but I wouldn't say I tried to model my game. So
that must have been extra cool to get drafted by Tampa then as well, if you grew up watching LeCavalier.
It was. Yeah. It was. They had a lot of French hockey players that, you know, were good time players there. Marty St. Louis, too. Guy from Quebec that had a great career there. So, yeah.
Boko, how many languages do you speak?
So, I would say 2.5. So, I would say French, English. And, you know, my parents speak Lingala, is their foreign country in Congo. So, I can't really speak it, but I still have family there, uncles, stuff like that. You know, when they give me a call, you know, sometimes, like, that's what they speak to me. You know, I just, you know, try to, like, you know, answer back or, you know, but they understand French, too, so I'm able to just answer back in French.
So, well, merci beaucoup for coming on. Absolutely. Well, that's awesome, Boko. And like I said, we just really appreciate you coming on and taking the time to talk to us. This has been a real treat, a real pleasure for us. And we want to wish you luck the best rest of the season. And we know we're going to see you up in LA pretty soon too. So, just thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thanks to you guys. Appreciate that.
Yeah, thanks, all Boko. Right.
Thanks so much, man. Keep it up.
See you guys.
All right, keep up the great work, buddy. Thank you. That's Boko and Mama, everybody. That was awesome. What a great dude.
Yeah, it's awesome.
That was really, really cool. And I'll tell you, you know, it seems like, last year he had a big impact with the rain. This year he's having an even bigger impact. So, I mean, he's definitely on the right trajectory. There's no doubt about it.
Well, I can imagine being an assistant captain on a team with 13 new faces on it. That's a lot of work in terms of leadership capabilities. So, they got the right people, and it's good to hear him say Brent mentioned Sutter's name as well. That was pretty cool.
Yeah, I didn't expect that answer, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I thought it'd be one of the young kids for sure.
Yeah, it's cool to get a little insight on how Byfield and Akil Thomas are. And it's good to hear that competitive side that they both have, and their willingness to get better, even better than they are. So it's good to hear.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The Kings draft picks are definitely trending up. So speaking of draft picks, Russell, I know there is something that you want to talk about.
Yeah, thanks, Scott. Bob McKenzie, the TSN Hockey Insider, he released his midseason draft rankings for the upcoming draft. Kind of go over it a little bit. I can just name the top 10 for the number one overall pick, or number one overall on his list was Owen Power, the University of Michigan defenseman product. And then you go down, it's Dylan Gunther at number two, Simone Edmondson. He had actually had Gunther and Edmondson ranked number two, tied for number two. And then four is Matty Beniers, Luke Hughes.
I will finish that list for him, and when he comes back, he can continue talking about it. So at number six, he's got right defenseman Brant Clark. Number seven, William Eklund, left winger. Number eight, he's got center Kent Johnson. Number nine, Chaz Lucius, I think it's how it's pronounced. And number 10 is Jesper Wallstedt, the Swedish goalie. I guess I know he wanted to talk about this, so the Kings can actually, at this point, they are number seven as far as worst team in the league, points-wise. So, Russ, I just set the stage for you. I finished off the list, and we're at number seven as far as being worst in the league point-wise. So, go ahead and continue on, my friend.
Yeah, so I don't know where I left off, but then you have at number six is Brant Clark. You have William Eklund at number seven, Kent Johnson, Chaz Lucius, and Jesper Wallstedt. But just to kind of go over that a little bit further, I know, Scott, you mentioned that the Kings would be ranked or drafting number seven if the season ended today. Just to kind of looking at what the Kings have in terms of their prospects right now and what they might be looking toward adding when it comes draft time, I think there's three players that I really like here. I know Owen Power is the consensus number one. It's interesting with this draft, you see a lot of different top 10 rankings and a lot of names kind of jumbled around. Owen Power is definitely a name that would love to see on the Kings with, I don't know if they'll be able to draft him with as high as he's been touting. But another name I really like in terms of the Kings is Kent Johnson. I kind of want to compare him to this year's Tim Stützle. He's got a lot of flash to his game. He's a high scoring forward. He's a lot of highlight reel plays that he's able to make. And he's one of the older players in this draft. So when you're looking for a player for the Kings to add for a team that's looking to kind of transition toward being a contender as far as not rebuilding, Ken Johnson is definitely a player I'd be looking to add. It's someone who'd be able to make an impact on an NHL roster sooner rather than later. And that's, I think, what the Kings have been lacking. And being a left shot forward, the Kings don't have too many left wingers right now. I think Arthur Kaliev is one of probably the best left winger that they have. Ken Johnson is a player I'd definitely be looking to add. Another one, Luke Hughes. That's another young player. Definitely one of the Hughes brothers along that lineage. He's a left shot defenseman. The thing with Hughes, though, for this year, he's only 17 years old. So that's a kid that probably won't be making strides into the NHL sooner rather than later. But he's got a lot of skill to his game, and we've seen what the other Hughes brothers are able to do in the NHL right now. And then third, another player I'd be looking at is Simone Edvinson. I know here Bob McKenzie has him ranked at the number two, but I've seen him as low as 10 or even lower to 13. A lot of comparisons I've seen in Edmonton's game is Victor Hedman. You're talking about a six foot four defenseman, left shot D. Kings don't have a lot of left shot defensemen really in their pipeline. I mean, you think Cole Holtz is probably the only real maybe NHL talented prospect that they have in the Ontario Reign. They are really stacked on the right side. So that's another player I'd probably be looking to add for the Kings.
Yeah, I mean, Russell, you talk about a year, you might just be able to throw most of the mock drafts out the window. It might be this year. I mean, teams value players differently already. And after a year like this, where there's barely been a junior season and you know, who knows what's going to happen. It's certainly possible a guy like him could drop to where the Kings are. And, you know, that being said, as far as who they should take, I know it's always kind of a not necessarily the smartest strategy to draft for need, but I do really feel like, you know, you look at their first-round picks the last few years, it's been pretty much all forwards aside from Bjornfoot. And I think their farm system certainly is getting a little top-heavy in terms of forwards. And, you know, I would love to see, you know, a young defenseman like a Luke Hughes or a Brant Clark, you know, added. Even if you do have to wait a couple years for Hughes, I think that's okay.
Any word on which one of these guys is the closest to being NHL ready?
I would say probably Owen Power. He's going to be finishing up another year in college for the University of Michigan. But the same thing with Kent Johnson. And that's kind of what I was looking for, those two players. Because Liz, if you're looking at the Kings, as I mentioned, they're looking for players that are going to make impact sooner rather than later. And if you're going to be drafting the top 10, I don't know how many. I mean, we see what Jamie Drysdale is doing in Anaheim. And he's making impacts right now, whether it be positive or negative. At least he's getting NHL playing time. And he was just drafted in the 2020 draft just recently as a sixth overall pick. So there is NHL talent able to be found in the top 10 that will make an impact in the next season, almost, is what I would say. So Ken Johnson is definitely a player I'd be looking toward. But if they're able to maybe find Owen Power, if he even falls to him, that's another player I'd definitely be looking to add.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I gotta, you know, thinking about all this, and you know, the previous episodes we talked about all the cap space that the Kings have going into this offseason, and that they're probably going to end up, you know, making at least one big trade, right? Because the free agent market is not going to be able to produce both that left winger and that left defense when they need. So it kind of makes you wonder, is if this pick isn't in play for a trade.
It's interesting. I know I sent you guys something along the lines of top 10 picks being traded. It's very rare. I can't recall the last time it happened. I know it was a few years ago, but it doesn't happen too often. But with a unique situation that the Kings are in, I know they're looking to add. I mean, we can all agree on that this summer is definitely important in terms of the future of this franchise. So is it in play? I would say if it's a late top 10 pick, definitely. I would definitely say it's in play, especially if they're looking to make that Jack Eichel trade. So why not? I mean, if you're going to be trying to get a player like Jack Eichel or just any type of high quality player, whether it be Rasmus Dahlin, we can go down that line again, but why not make that move and kind of start the rebuild and start getting a contention mode.
You know who I think the last top 10 pick might have been to be traded that I can think of is the Elias Anderson pick from Arizona to New York.
Yeah. Like
the seventh overall pick or something, I think it was.
Yeah, that's
what
right.
About the what about Cal McCarr and then that yeah. Cal McCarr ready to chuck situation? And then even like this year with Stutzel. He was San Jose's pick, correct?
Yeah, but those were more like kind of accidental, I think. Like, I think
San Jose, oh, okay, I see what you mean.
When,
right.
When San Jose traded that pick, I don't think they were planning on drafting yeah. third. Yeah.
They would love to take really? That pick, I'm sure. another thing I'll go into in terms of this draft, I don't foresee it happening with the Kings or this player joining the Kings, but an interesting name that's in the top 10 here is Jesper Wallstedt. He's a goalie out of Sweden, and I've seen rankings having him as high as number one overall. So it's very interesting. That's a very, very good goaltender. We saw Yaroslav Askarov go pretty high to Nashville last year. So look for Jesper Wallstedt. He played, I believe he was the goalie for the Swedish team during the World Junior Championship that just recently, this last year. So he'll probably make another impact for that team next year. But it's interesting, Jack. You mentioned drafting in terms of need. From a Kings standpoint, probably my favorite player in this draft is Matthew Beniers. I mean, you watch him play, and he was very impactful on the World Junior Championship team for Team USA. I mean, this kid's got a motor to him, and he's all over the ice, all on top of the forecheck, and I've seen a lot of comparisons to Patrice Bergeron for him. So if the Kings draft like where he's at in the top four or he falls to them, that's, I know we have a lot of centers on the team already, but that's someone that would be hard to pass up.
Well, I think you would definitely be getting into yourself to a spot where you would have to trade some prospects then, for sure. I mean, even more so than they already are right now.
Prospects or draft capital to get that kind of young, dynamic defenseman.
Oh,
you'd have to trade out. You know, if you're going to take another offensive prospect, you'd really have to go get that Rasmus Dahlin. Everyone just mutes Scott and Russell right now so we can't end this damn argument again. But you know what I'm saying.
That was funny. I know Jay Fresh Hockey, the guy we had on a couple episodes, he tweeted out something today in terms of defensive offensive impact or something along the lines. And it's something we all knew, that the Kings were probably one of the bottom teams in that. So adding some more offense on the defensive end wouldn't hurt. But it's good to have Matt Roy coming back, that's for sure.
Oh, and yeah, and Todd McClellan was just asked. Doubt. Yeah, I believe it was by Jim Fox asked him today how Todd can achieve more offensive production out of his blue line. And I think right now it's just kind of a personnel thing. But, you know, Todd gave him his answer, but he's working with what he has.
Yeah, I mean, we all know the positive impact that Matt Roy has on the team overall. You know, he's also not someone who puts up a ton of points from the back end. And, you know, when Curtis McDermott spent most of the years with your second most even strength goals or points or whatever it is from your back end, like, we know that's a problem. So at some point, whether you're getting those guys through the draft or you're trading for them, they are going to have to bring in some offensive talent to their blue line eventually.
Guys, just real quick, with Matt Roy back into the fold.
Yeah, you know, the thing with a guy like Matt.
What do you guys picture the back of the blue line looking like now? Let me give you my answer. Here's my answer. So obviously the top pairing doesn't change. You got Matt Roy on the second pairing. I'm going to put, assuming he's still out, I'm going to put Cale Clegg on the second line in place of Tobias Bjornfoot. I think you got to keep Christian Willanen up with the NHL roster. You know, you made a trade for him. He's a restricted free agent at the end of this year. You got to figure out what you have in him. Obviously, then Sean Walker is your third pairing on the right side. And then Curtis McDermott becomes your seventh defenseman. Or when Bjornfoot comes back, you got to figure out what you want to do. If you want to send Clegg back down, or if you want to put McDermott on waivers, or... But that's kind of my thoughts.
Yeah, I don't want to send Clegg back down. You know, I don't want to see him sitting for Ole Mata or Curtis McDermott. You know,
Jack, you just mentioned that. I forgot Ole Mata and that whole mess too.
You got to play the kids a bit here. You know, Cal Clegg, someone who I think deserves an opportunity. He's played well, I think, lately in a limited capacity, and I would not like to see him taking out a lineup. He's someone I'd like to see playing for the rest of the season. And, you know, if that means you got to put McDermott on waivers or, you know, you got to sit Mata, I know he's making a lot of money, but, you know, so be it. I don't want to see Clegg coming out of the lineup.
Yeah, I'm with you, Jack. I mean, I tweeted out something that when Cale Clegg and Matt Roy were paired together, they were one of the better drivers of play on the team. And that's all defensive pairing. So, I don't see with Matt Roy coming back, I don't see how you can split those two up. I'd like to see Cale Clegg and Matt Roy get back together. As far as the third pairing, like you mentioned, you can't have Ole Mata be playing over Tobias Bjornfort or Cale Clegg, especially right now. I think you have to put Tobias Bjornfort back in the lineup with Sean Walker. And I think they would complement each other pretty well. We kind of see Tobias Bjornfort as not really much of an offensive kind of defenseman, but Sean Walker does have that offensive capability. So it would be cool to, with each pairing, you kind of have that offense and defense on each side. You have Mikey Anderson with Drew Doughty. We know what Doughty brings, and we know what Mikey brings. And then you have Matt Roy, Steady Eddie, paired with Cale Clegg. Cale Clegg has been proven to be a pretty good one in terms of driving offensive play. So, and now you have Toby with Sean Walker. That's a pretty solid defensive six. And I mentioned in the last episode, that's a defensive six that I wouldn't be disappointed if they went into next season having. And if I know there's been some talk as far as the expansion draft, there's no way that the Kings can lose Cale Clegg in the expansion draft. There's no way. They've spent way too much time developing that player. He's a former second round pick. That's someone they have to keep.
I'm sure we'll touch on this in an entire episode, the expansion draft, but just real quick off the cuff, would you guys rather protect 8 skaters or go the 7 forwards, 3 defensemen route?
That's a good question. I'd have to look a little closer at who's all eligible and all that.
Because the only way you can protect Clegg is if you go with the 8 skaters.
Yeah.
So I've looked into this. So I'm with you on the 8 skaters, 1 goalie. So this is what happened. So let's say they do go the 7-3-1. If you go 7-3-1, you lose a Cale Clegg. That's pretty much what was happening because you'll only be able to protect 3. And the 3 defensemen they'll be protecting are Drew Doughty, who has no movement clause, Matt Roy, and then Sean Walker. We can debate Sean Walker, but that's a contract that Seattle would snap up in a heartbeat. You'd take a $2.6 million offensive young defenseman like that to build around. That's something easily they would take. So you got to protect Sean Walker. But if you do go to the eight skaters route, you're going to end up losing a player like maybe Dustin Brown. You probably have to leave him unprotected. I just don't see Seattle taking Dustin Brown at 1 year left. And there's probably no possibility to maybe want to re-sign there. I just don't see it happening. But you either lose Dustin Brown, Andreas Athanasiou, maybe a Trevor Moore, Carl Grundstrom. And I think you'd probably have to protect Elias Anderson. I think there's still some potential there, and that's a player. So the question really is do you want to lose a Cale Clegg and keep maybe a Carl Grundstrom or even a Dustin Brown or an Andreas Athanasiou, or do you want to protect Cale Clegg and leave those skaters unprotected? And that's kind of where the Kings, I guess, puzzle is at right now.
Yeah, you know, I remember the Vegas expansion draft a few years ago, and it was like, so the Kings are basically either going to lose Trevor Lewis or Braden McNabb. I was like, okay. This year, it sounds like, you know, we might lose someone, you know, who hurts a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's. I like Sean Walker. I like his game. I like him a lot. But I mean, to me, Cale Clegg can almost be basically a younger version of him. Even though Walker's only like 26 years old, right? So if the Kings were to lose him, it wouldn't be the end of the world, to be honest with you. I mean, as much as I like his game and all that, like I said, I don't know. I still think maybe that 8 skaters is the way to go. They could definitely risk losing a forward as opposed to a defenseman because they're so loaded at forward throughout the prospect system and really roster-wise. So, but we're also not at the expansion draft yet, and trades have not yet been made. So
We'll yeah, and that's the thing. I think with Scott Walker, if the Kings do want to move him, which I actually wouldn't be opposed to in the offseason, they'd probably be more than trade, more than leaving him unprotected. Because, like I mentioned, that contract was definitely is not that bad when you look at it. I think it's 3 years left at $2.6 million. So that's something that teams would like to have, especially with the flat cap situation going on. So there's some trade value to a player like Sean Walker. He brings a lot of offensive capability, and he's still young. So I think that's something that they could move on a trade as before they end up losing him in the expansion draft.
What do you think we'd have to give Seattle to get them to take?
Yeah, I think so.
The way Vegas and Pittsburgh did with Fleury.
I don't know. I don't see that happening. we could all
honestly, I wouldn't give Seattle anything to take anybody. And I think with this expansion draft, you're going to see a lot of GMs learn their lesson from the Vegas draft.
Absolutely. I don't know who mentioned it. Maybe it was Pierre LeBrun, but I know somebody mentioned that teams have definitely learned from the last draft. And look at what the Panthers did when they gave them Riley Smith and Jonathan Marsh or so, and the Ducks gave them Shea Theodore for nothing. I mean, it's just
look at Minnesota.
That yeah, and that team was just
William Carlson. Like it was
it was just great players were just handed to them, and now everyone's wondering why they're so good. It's like, well look in the mirror.
It begs the question: like, why does nobody ask? Why are they exempt from the expansion draft?
They absolutely should not be.
I've seen that floating around on Twitter. It's just like, that's a great question. Why are they exempt?
Yeah, it's funny. No one was asking that question when they were in the expansion draft, and then they made the Stanley Cup final, and everyone was like, "Wait a minute, what's going on here?" So yeah, it's definitely something that's. People would be upset about.
Well, at the time, it made sense. So, okay, if you know this team, they might still be building. It's not totally fair. But now it's like they've been great all 4 years. They're loaded. They could afford to lose somebody in the expansion draft. Yeah, right. They'd be okay.
Yeah, well, and with their salary cap breakdown, I'm sure they wouldn't mind either.
Right.
Yeah. And when they have players like Alex Tuch, who's on like a $4.5 million deal for three more years, it just makes me. Just that team is just so stacked, and it's going to be hard to usurp them. I can't, if I'm saying that word right, in the West Division.
Well, and the thing you got to remember about that expansion draft too, it wasn't even so much that the players that they were able to draft, it was the assets that they received to not draft certain players and all that, which is why they were able to parlay that into guys like Mark Stone, Alex Pietrangelo. Well, not so much Alex Pietrangelo because he was a free agent signing, but. They were able to make the room to get, you know, trade Nate Schmidt out to make the room to get him. So there was a lot to that. And like I said, I don't think that mistake gets made again. So, but anyways, looks like our time for this podcast is coming to an end. We want to thank Boko Amama for coming on once again. It was a great guest, a great guy. And well, there's no Kings game tonight, but there is tomorrow night against our hated rival, the Anaheim Ducks. So, let's tune in for that, and let's hold on to our very, very slim playoff hopes. So, so with that said, for Jack Weber, for Ryan Sykes, for Russell Morgan, I'm Scott Kinville. Thanks for listening, and everybody go Kings go.
Go Kings. See you guys.